produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in to the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Tuesdays here on the Audio Stash, we focus on medical and patient issues. After breaking news today, we'll listen in on a talk from Amanda Penick on her groundbreaking research regarding medical marijuana facilities in California. This important data gathered from hundreds of patients can only be heard highlighted here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Also today on Patient Perspectives, we'll hear Montel Williams' passionate testimony before the New Jersey State Legislature, showing his support for the upcoming New Jersey Senate Bill 88. Music on the program today features Government Mule from the Hempelation album. Normal's Audio Stash able to bring you music like no other podcast can offer. We'll wrap things up today with the weekly web polling kickoff and a special free stuff giveaway. All here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, National MS Society to fund clinical cannabis trial. The National MS Society has announced that it will provide funding to complete an ongoing clinical trial by the University of California Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research investigating the use of cannabis to treat symptoms of multiple sclerosis. Previous preclinical and clinical trial data indicate that cannabis and cannabis extracts can provide symptomatic relief for MS patients, including decreased spasticity, pain, incontinence, and depression, as well as potentially moderate disease progression. The study is the first U.S. trial on cannabis and MS in several decades. Investigators will utilize a novel scale in the trial, developed especially to measure the impact of cannabis on MS-associated spasticity. The University of California had previously begun recruitment for the trial, but ran out of funding. With the new funding, the trial is now expected to be completed in early 2008. According to the MS Society, as many as 15% of MS patients in the United States use cannabis therapeutically to treat the disease. A 2002 survey of MS patients in the United Kingdom and reported by Reuters Newswire found that 43% of respondents used medicinal cannabis. Both the MS Societies of Canada and the UK are on record in support of the medicinal use of cannabis, a position the United States Society has refused to take despite intense lobbying from MS patient groups such as the Montel Williams MS Foundation. More information on our website, normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash on this Tuesday. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. We've assembled some spectacular audio for you today. Take a moment to join us at Normal. Visit norml.org. Let's get to our first segment. Today we'll listen in on an extended clip from Amanda Penick. Amanda's research regarding medical marijuana facilities in California is truly groundbreaking. She spent many hours with hundreds of patients, helping them complete a 130-page survey about their experience. This data on how effective the facilities are at meeting patient needs is heartening and at times surprising. This is important research, and it's just what the Audio Stash is all about. We'll feature the most important audio regarding cannabis here on the program. Make sure you listen up here every day. Here's Amanda Penick speaking this April in San Francisco.
And I decided to do my dissertation research on medical cannabis facilities in the San Francisco Bay Area. And the reason I decided to do that was kind of threefold. I felt like I was really in a unique position to do this kind of research. And as Ethan Nadelman so eloquently put it before, start to legitimize what was going on in some of these facilities in San Francisco so that when other states that have passed medical marijuana legislation wanted to open up the same kind of facilities to protect their patients from having to go and get their medicine on the black market, we could develop some kind of model of best practice so that we could take it on the road, so to speak, and start to develop other facilities utilizing and preserving what has really come out of Dennis Perone's movement in the Social Model Club here in San Francisco. So again, the three reasons I decided to get into this was that, one, I'm a patient myself. So moving out here from Chicago in 2002, I was really impressed with what was going on in the movement, and I thought that it was something that really needed to be shared. And I was also kind of tired of the news stories that talked about medical cannabis dispensaries, because they always show the same picture, either a really large bag of weed or somebody smoking out of the exact same pipe. I think they've been using that same shot and that same pipe for like 3 or 4 years. And what I was seeing was very different. I was seeing support, and I was seeing patients who were ill getting a lot of camaraderie from each other. And I was seeing, you know, products being sold like books and magazines and T-shirts. And I was seeing activism being generated in these facilities. And that's what I wanted to get out to the public. And I thought that if we could demystify a bit what was going on and really show the positive things that were coming out of this movement, then maybe when we wanted to go develop a facility system in, say, Montana, or one of the other states that have recently passed legislation, it wouldn't be so scary, and we'd be able to bring this out of a place of legitimate research. So I am a patient, I'm also a researcher, and I'm also a social worker. So I thought that that also could kind of give me a unique perspective into some of the social support benefits that go on at facilities. So I'm going to talk a bit about my study. And I'm going to give just a quick, a lot of you guys probably already know all this, but just a bit about the facility history, you know, the medical cannabis facilities. And I use facility and dispensary interchangeably, and there's a reason for that. I did some pretesting with the surveys I did for my study, and some of the feedback that I got was that some of the facilities, dispensaries, prefer to be called facilities because dispensary might lead to some incriminating activity. So I use facility in my research report. But I mean the same thing. So what was going on in Dennis Perone's home was really more of the social model. Lester Grinspoon kind of coined these terms of the social model and the pharmacy model, medical cannabis dispensary. And the social club model is pretty much what it sounds like. It's really not just about the dispensing of medication, but it's about the social support, and it's about addressing not only the medical needs of patients, but the social and emotional needs of patients as well. And this is kind of on the other end of the spectrum from the pharmacy model, which is how the medical cannabis system is carried out in Amsterdam, which is really more of a Walgreens-style pharmacy. You walk in, you get your medication, and you leave. Not the coffee shops, but the medical cannabis dispensing itself. And some people do prefer this. So I think that it's important to study both types of facilities and kind of figure out what's working and what's not so that we can kind of offer both types to patients. The rules, as you know, vary from city to city as in the Bay Area as far as medical cannabis facilities. The three cities in the Bay Area that I was kind of focusing on were Oakland, Berkeley, and San Francisco, although my study sites were both all in Berkeley and San Francisco. And then there's also a question of what's going on in unincorporated areas. They also don't really know what to do. And something that I was noticing was that there were a lot of moratoriums being issued in unincorporated areas around the development of medical cannabis dispensaries. And I felt that one of those reasons was because they didn't really know what to do. And it wasn't that they were against it necessarily or for it necessarily, but they had a lot of questions. And they really didn't know how this was going to fit into their landscape. They were afraid of making bad decisions. And again, this is one of the reasons I felt this study was important, because it gives people something to look at. And I also noticed that a lot of the debate around medical cannabis facilities was about the zoning. And is it this close to a school? And is it, can people smoke outside? And should we have parking? And do they need this license or that license? And what was kind kind of being left out of the discussion was, what do the patients want? You know, when you start any new business or even a medical health service, you want to know who your patients are. Who are you serving? What do they like? What do they want? What, you know, what works best for them? And this was kind of being left out of the discussions that were going on in City Hall, and which is another reason I thought it was important to do this study. So my study was both a description of medical cannabis patients and a description of facilities. So I had a patient-based evaluation of services at 7 different facilities and also a description of the service utilization pattern. The description of medical cannabis patients I looked at, and this was 130 anonymous surveys, and God bless them, each one was 20 pages long, and they were really hard to get through. But, you know, I was sitting in these facilities for 7-8 hours at a time, and we had a good time and made a day of it, so it was a great experience. So I was looking at demographics like gender, ethnicity, and income, whether or not patients had health insurance, the length of time of their symptoms, and how long they've been treated. I had a measure of general health status that covered physical, emotional, and general health. And then I also looked at two issues, one of self-medication and the other of substitution. There's been some really interesting work by Dr. McAria around substituting cannabis for alcohol, also for other drugs, and also the presence of self-medication. You know, we've kind of talked about the spectrum of what is medical, what is not medical, and if I take an aspirin and I just go decide to take that aspirin, is that self-medication? Well, of course it is. I decided to do it. If I go have a cup of coffee in the morning, I don't need a doctor's prescription to do so. I've decided to do it, and that's self-medication as well. So that was another concept that I was interested in. And then I also had an alcohol treatment component, and the reason I did this was because I noticed there were a lot of similarities between 12-step programs and the social model of medical cannabis clubs, and that there really wasn't an expert on hand. Like, there's nobody in the club with, like, a white coat who's standing there, you know, with some kind of stethoscope to administer your medication. The people that work there mostly are patients. They are people that can relate very well to the people that they're serving. That was where the alcohol interest came from. So I wanted to know if medical cannabis patients had been previously in alcohol treatment. If they had, was it their choice to go? And then their satisfaction with various types of alcohol treatment. So we could maybe look at some commonalities between alcohol treatment models such as 12-step versus like a hospital inpatient program and different dispensary models like the social club model versus the pharmacy model.
That was Amanda Penick with her groundbreaking research regarding medical marijuana facilities. We've got links with some more info at normalaudiostash.com. Next up today in our weekly patient perspective segment, we'll hear Montel Williams in his testimony before the New Jersey State Legislature June 8th in support of New Jersey Senate Bill 88. Mr. Williams lives with MS or multiple sclerosis and uses medical marijuana for its many proven benefits. He has featured medical marijuana and the court cases surrounding it prominently on his television program. Here's Montel Williams, June 8th in New Jersey.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bell, and members of the committee. And thanks for hearing us for a minute. This is a tough one for me. And just because of what the nurse just said. I'm not only the poster child for MS now, around the world. I'm the poster child for pot. I spent 22 years in this military. Not military. I was in the Marine Corps when I graduated from high school. I went to the United States Naval Academy and graduated with a degree in engineering and a minor in international security affairs. I went to the United States Defense Language Institute where I studied Russian. I went to the National Cryptologic School where I studied cryptology. I then served for 9 years as a special duty intelligence officer in some of the worst places in this world, supporting and defending this Constitution. And what angers me so much is that now all people want to consider me as the dope head. And all I'm trying to do is get up in the morning and go to work. Pain-free. You can have people argue here and talk all this garbage about what the bad effects of marijuana is. Let's talk about this for a second, because I don't think I watched some of you, and please forgive me, I'm not judging, but when the doctor was speaking, I think you missed a couple of his points, and I want to go back over them for a second. For 1937, 22 medications were available for prescription in the United States. Eli Lilly, several corporations in the United States of America produced marijuana-based medications that you could get for prescription. Right now, our number one ally in the war on terror, Great Britain, has already approved a sublingual medicinal marijuana spray for people with MS, AIDS, and cancer. Canada has now just approved MS, AIDS, cancer, medicinal marijuana, smoke form, and every other form because they recognize its efficacy. Every study done since 1937 in this country by our federal government and by every organization in the world has come back and claimed the efficacy of marijuana. So for us to even argue its efficacy is almost ridiculous. And the one thing that the doctor stated that no one seemed to blink over, and I'm going to talk about again, since 1978, everybody in this room needs to hear this. Since 1978, the United States government has been dispensing marijuana every 17th of the month in a canister to originally 25 members of our society. Now it's down to 6 because they're dying off. And what they would hope is that they just die so they don't have to continue to do this. But this 17th of this month, a canister of 50 marijuana cigarettes will go out from the University of Mississippi with a USDA stamp on it from the federal government to 6 people. I know them. One of them in particular, Irv, every now and then when I see him in Florida, will share his medication with me, the medication that our government has given to him. The same government that off the side of their mouth will say is a drug that's not efficacious. I thought we were a government that does no harm. If we do no harm, then we would not provide drugs to someone that we claim was hurting them because we claim it works. So that's why our federal government is growing it. Has studied it since 1978 at the University of Mississippi. How egregious is the offense that we're wasting all this money and still lying to the American public? I'll tell you my story real quick, and I know we've taken a lot of your time, and I thank you so much, sir, for this. I was on an airplane flying to Utah in 1999 to go do an episode of a show by the name of Touched by an Angel. I was acting, and I do act from time to time, and I was playing, at the time, the worst character I've ever played in my life, and I thought it was kind of prophetic because I had to play a cult leader, and the script called for me burning all these people at the end. I got on this plane. By the time I got off the plane in Utah, my feet were on fire, and they've not stopped burning since. I live in pain 24 hours a day, every day. It's become my friend. I have to figure out how to put it into a box. I have to figure out how to sit here for 15 minutes waiting because I have to get up and move around and make my legs stop hurting. I ate some marijuana last night. I smoked some this morning before I got in a car and came down here. It doesn't get me high at all. The 1999 study by the IOM, proved that people like ourselves, because the same receptors that are responsible for pain also are the same receptors that pick up the THC, for some reason my brain averts it. It doesn't get me high. All it does is it stops my feet from hurting. And it allows me to pay the inordinate amount of taxes that I pay every single year. I'm not asking for a lot, and I don't think the people here in New Jersey are asking for a lot. They're just asking to get the same thing and have the same relief that our federal government claims that 6 U.S. citizens have the right to. And the rest of us don't have the right to. How can you discriminate against me? How can you tell me that in one breath, 6 people in this country have the right to pain medication provided to by our government, and the rest of you go to hell? I've been shot at, folks. I've sat underneath of Soviet submarines. I took down, it was part of the reason why the first Libyan shoot-down planes were taken out of the sky. I got out of the military and left the military. In 1988, I started a program called Reach the American Dream where I was speaking around the country to schools. I spoke to 3 million young people in a program that I started myself, giving away scholarships to kids to stay in school if they stay drug-free. I've been a proponent and talked on my show day after day after day about the abuses of drugs in this country. I'm not talking about abusing drugs. I'm talking about medication. If we were sitting here talking about MD-644, nobody would care. MD-644 could be made out of a plant from the rainforest. We wouldn't care. That plant could be marijuana. You wouldn't care. Aspirin's made from bark. You don't care. Tamoxifen's made from a weed. You don't care. If we allow science to do what it can do, like it's already done in the 11 states that have already approved medicinal marijuana programs, we're a capitalist society, and we will do what capitalist society do best. We'll come up with ways and instruments for which we can ingest this, so the image of people sitting around in corners smoking will go away. I eat more marijuana than I smoke. I can eat it in a pill form. Guess what? It comes in a liquid form. I can mix it in chili if I choose to. And if you stop and you think about it, it's already proven that in the state of California, since the medicinal marijuana laws have been on the books, marijuana usage among teenagers has gone down. I got to tell you something. I take $2,400 worth of medication a month. I take 3 shots a day. I took a shot this morning. I'll go home and inject myself 2 more times this evening. I have children at home. Okay? My youngest is 11. I have a 12-year-old. I got a 16-year-old, now 17, and a 22-year-old. My 10-year-old, 11-year-old, watch me, 11 and 12-year-old, watch me hold my skin when I take my shots. My 12-year-old knows that I have pot in my closet. My 12-year-old has had discussions in his school about his father's medication. He has no intentions of using what I have. He knows that his dad needs it to get up to go play with him. He knows his dad needs it to go to sleep. There'll be a lot of arguments contrary about how crazy we are. I'm not crazy. I'm just a taxpayer trying to say that if our government thinks it's good enough for 6 people, then damn it, it should be good enough for me. Thank you.
That was Montel Williams' June 8th testimony before the New Jersey State Legislature. Now it's time for some audio stash music with Government Mule from the Hempilation album. Oh, those CDs are just packed to the brim with great music.
close their eyes to things they have no right to do. Just as soon as you are gone, hope will start to climb. Please don't stay around too long, you're wasting precious time.
Government Mule from the Hempelation album here on Normal's Daily Audio Stat. We'll also feature pod-safe independent artists on the program found up at podshow.com. Next up, it's time to start up our weekly web polling. You can vote now at normalaudiostash.com. Get those fingers on those mouses. It's time for our first web poll of the week here at Normal's Daily Audio Stash. We got two of these every single week, and we tally up your votes on Friday. First, I want to say really a huge thank you to everyone who's sent in emails, voted on our web polls, sent in your entries into our free stuff giveaways. We got another one of those coming up here in a few minutes today. But thank you for your response here at Normal's Daily Audio Stash. We're already number 20 at iTunes Politics, so lots of folks listening out there, lots of folks sending your comments and emails in. That just goes to show that marijuana continues to be more popular than, well, most politicians out there. Speaking of politics, it's time for you to get voting in our first weekly web poll today. Here's the poll. Have you ever had to take a pre-employment or employment drug test? Have you ever had to take a drug test at work, folks? Maybe to get a job, maybe at the job. I've had to take a few pre-employment drug tests and routine drug screening. I've even passed a few, as a matter of fact. But have you ever had to take a pre-employment drug test or a drug screen at work? Let us know if you have or have not had to take a drug test. Take the web poll right at normalaudiostash.com. It's time to get some free stuff here at Normal's Daily Audio Stash. We're going to send you out your own little box of stuff here from Normal's Audio Stash. We've already had a couple of winners. Thanks again to all of you who've been sending in emails to the program and entering into these free stuff giveaways that we've had. We're going to do this at least once a week. We're going to try and give away even more free stuff here in the future. Today's free stuff giveaway is a copy of the book, Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence by Mitch Earlywine. This book is an important read, and I'm working my way through it right now, as a matter of fact. We speak with Mitch almost every Wednesday here at Normal's Daily Audio Stash, and he'll be with us again tomorrow. But send in your emails right now. There's two ways to win free stuff here on Tuesdays at Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Way number one, enter into our first weekly web poll. Go up to the website, normalaudiostash.com. Also, you can send us an email, freestuff@normalaudiostash.com. That's freestuff@normalaudiostash.com. All entries must be received by midnight Eastern Standard Time today, June the 20th, 2006, to enter into this free stuff drawing. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Amanda Penick for contributing to today's show. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.